you ever been in the situation of hearing one part of a phone conversation but unable to hear the other side of that conversation? Most of us have. Welcome to Right Start with Jim Custer, the teaching pastor for Grace Polaris Church in Columbus, Ohio. And thank you for joining us today. In chapter 7 of the book of 1 Corinthians, that's where we find ourselves. Paul is answering questions about sex, but we don't have the original questions. Turn with us today to the New Testament book of 1 Corinthians, and here's Pastor Jim.
If you've been here for the last four or five Sundays and I haven't embarrassed you by the message, then today's your day. I thought we should have the ushers pass out brown paper bags for everybody coming in this morning, so you could slip the brown paper bag on, and you could react the way you want to, and no one would even know what your reaction is. And we want to talk about sacred sex. Turn in your Bibles, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I hope you remember the message last week where Paul addressed fornication very boldly in the concluding verses of chapter 6. I want to read just several verses, and then in a moment we'll look at this whole chapter, all 40 verses. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1 tells us that Paul is responding to questions that have been asked him. How I wish we had a copy of that letter. It would give us a lot of information that we simply do not have and would enable us to more accurately pinpoint the answers he gives to those questions. But without the questions, we have the answers, and from the answer, it's kind of like listening to one end of a conversation on the phone. Your wife is on the phone, your husband's on the phone, and you hear the responses and you wonder what the question was, provoked that kind of foolishness. Well, in this case, it's a very serious subject. It has to do with our behavior and our response in the community of other humans as sexual beings. Chapter 7, verse 1, about the things you wrote, it is good for a man not to have relations with a woman, but because of sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, each woman should have her own husband, etc. Verse 7, I wish that all people were just like me, but each has his own gift from God, one this and another. I say to the unmarried and to widows, it is good for them if they remain as I am. But if they do not have self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with desire. I command the married, not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to leave her husband. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And a husband is not to leave his wife. Let your eyes go down to verse 17. Each one must live his life in the situation the Lord assigned when God called him. This is what I command in all the churches. Verse 20. Each person should remain in the life situation in which he was called. Verse 23. You are bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. Brothers, each person should remain with God in whatever situation he was called. Verse 25. About virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I do give an opinion as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Therefore, I consider this to be good because of the present distress. It is fine for a man to stay as he is. Verse 28. However, if you do get married, you've not sinned, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned, but such people will have trouble in this life. And I am trying to spare you. But I say this, brothers, the time is limited, so from now on, those who have wives should be as though they had none. etc. 32. I want you to be without concerns. An unmarried man is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And he is divided. You want that brown paper bag? Yeah. Look at verse 35. Now I am saying this for your benefit, not to put a restraint on you, but because of what is proper, and so that you may be devoted to the Lord without distraction. Verse 38. So then, he who marries off, the Greek says, he who marries off, he who gives in marriage his virgin, probably talking about a young daughter of marriageable age. So we read this. So the Christian father who marries off his virgin daughter does well, but he who does not marry her off will do better. A wife is bound as long as her husband is living. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married to anyone she wants, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she remains as she is, in my opinion. And I think I also have the Spirit of God. Wow. I wish we had to 4 o'clock this afternoon to talk about these things and answer all the questions that are to come to your mind, but we don't. Whew, rest easy. 4 or 5 things from this passage I want to give you in just a moment that I hope will steer you through the passage and keep you from moving down a fruitless and unprofitable rabbit trail. The Apostle Paul was a single man. And he must have taken some real serious ribbing about that, because this passage is his response in defending the preferred choice of living life without a mate. That overshadows this whole passage. As a matter of fact, in verse 1 of chapter 7, he begins by noting It is good for a man not to touch a woman, not to be involved in sexual relationships with a lady. That sets the tone for the whole passage. I want you to notice how he keeps coming back to that. That is Paul's perspective. It is his reasoned experience, and it is his counsel for the Corinthians. Notice with me, please, in chapter 7, verse 1, it is good for a man not to have relations with a woman. Look at verse 7. I wish that all people were just like me. Look at verse 8. I say to the unmarried and the widows, it is good for them if they remain as I am. Get the point? Get the point? Now look at verse 26. Therefore, I consider this to be good because of the present distress. It is fine. It is wonderful. It is excellent for a man to stay as he is. Are you loose from a wife? Do not seek a wife. Now he goes on to say that if you get married, such people will have trouble in this life. I am trying to spare you. Get the drift yet? Verse 32, I want you to be without concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. A married man, he's divided. An unmarried woman or a virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, so that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now I am saying this for your own benefit. You get it? Not to put a restraint on you, but because of what is proper, and so that you may be devoted to the Lord without distraction. Verse 38. So then he who gives his virgin daughter in marriage does well, but he who does not give his virgin daughter in marriage will do better. Verse 40. She is happier if she remains as she is, in my opinion. This is to a woman who's now a widow. Let your eyes go over to chapter 9. Chapter 9. Here Paul's talking about Christian liberty. And look with me, please, at verse 5. One of his arguments there. Chapter 9, verse 5. Don't we, speaking of himself and Barnabas, don't we have the right to be accompanied by a Christian wife like other apostles, like the Lord's brothers, and like Peter? The point is very clear. Paul is single and proud of it. Now you better get that, because it introduces to us this morning an unfamiliar strain. It says that we ought to catch the distinction and honor those among us who choose not to be married. Things got very quiet. Those who choose to refrain from a marriage relationship are not to be scoffed, joked about, ridiculed, or in any way diminished. They may have found something that Paul discovered. And there is a freedom, there is a lack of distraction, there is a benefit. It is good. It is good. Matter of fact, it is better, Paul argues. Now remember, Paul's perspective as you read this passage, this is not advice to the lovelorn. This is not a Dear Abby letter. This is an impassioned praise, an impassioned argument, an impassioned reason for singleness. Got that? Number two, remember his audience. When he talks over here about, therefore, he says in verse 26, therefore I consider this to be good because of the present distress. It is fine for a man to stay as he is. When he says that, what's he talking about? In verse 29, when he says, I say this, brothers, the time is limited. So from now on, those who have wives should be as those that had none. Those that rejoice as they didn't rejoice. Those that buy as they did not possess. Those that use the world. What's that all about? Well, because this world in its current form is passing away. What's that all about? It's very real to Paul. Now, remember that the Corinthians have received 6 chapters already of instruction. And frankly, they're a bunch of spiritual babies. That's what he said. Back in chapter 3, the first several verses, he says, you guys are babes. Now, he's writing this letter to them, having evangelized them and set up the church maybe 3 to 5 years before. And now 5 years later, he's writing this letter from Ephesus and saying, hey, you guys haven't grown up at all yet. You're still little tots. You're still infants. You still need milk. You're not ready for meat. He goes on to say that instead of being spiritual, being taught and filled and guided by the Spirit, they are like carnal people. Instead of operating on the wisdom of God, they are operating on the wisdom of the world that passes away. Instead of being shaped by God's truth, they are being shaped by the world's opinions. That's who these people are that are receiving this letter. And you need to factor that in, because there are places, other places in the New Testament where these same topics are taught, and you're going to find a little different kind of instruction. Why? Because the audience is different. When my sons and daughter were this tall, this tall, this tall, we said, if you go beyond that line in the driveway, you're going to get a spanking, because that's a street out there, and it's dangerous, and people can get killed. You can get hurt. So you don't go beyond that line. If you do, and more than once we, you know, kids get to playing wiffle ball, and boom, the ball goes out of court, and they don't think about the street. They don't. They're just in the game. And so more than once, we had to have a little Board of Education on Scene Learning. Now listen. My sons, my daughter now come to visit. They drive on that street. And I remember very well in each case the time that I first handed the keys, first to Dan, then to Tim, then to Joe, and stood there thinking, oh my, I wish I could enforce that rule again. It's dangerous out there, dangerous. But you see, you treat your adult children with different counsel than you do your immature growing children. Got that? Remember that. That all plays into this. Remember that. That all plays into this. Paul has spent 3 chapters now developing information for them. It's all clued in where Paul says, don't you know? 8 times he's used that phrase already in the first 6 chapters. Don't you know? What's he doing? He's saying, wake up. You are Christians. You have been transformed out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. You've been bought with a price. You are now indwelt by the Holy Spirit of God. Your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. You're to glorify God in your body. You're separated. You're an insider. They're an outsider. Wake up. Get informed. That's the audience he's talking to. So understanding Paul's point of view, understanding the audience to whom he spoke, what does Paul say when it comes to this matter of our sexual orientation? What are the principles that guide us through this passage? Number one, God's command. Number one, write it down. God has spoken on this issue. Now, it's interesting that this may be the first written statement where the command of God is written down. Matthew may not have been written yet. Good chance it wasn't. Luke, Mark, John, those gospels haven't found written form yet. Interesting. So this may be the earliest advice to Christians about the commands of God regarding marriage. Now look at it, verse 8. I say to the unmarried and to widows, it is good for them if they remain as I am. Verse 10, I command the married, not I, but the Lord. The Lord. The Lord's command is a wife is not to leave her husband. If she does leave, she must remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and a husband is not to leave his wife. That's red ink. That's the command. So if this morning you are married, you are held in that relationship by the clear command of God. Where does it say that? Turn back to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. Here, Matthew, who wrote this epistle or this gospel after in time, gives us a conversation Jesus had over divorce. Now, we're not going down that rabbit trail, but I want you to see something. So many times we get off on a rabbit trail, we miss the target of this passage. We miss the target looking for loopholes. Now look at it. Matthew chapter 19. Jesus finished his sayings, and large crowds followed him. The Pharisees approached him to test him. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife on any grounds? Jesus' response, haven't you read? He who created them in the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. The two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What God has joined together, man must not separate. There it is. Or the Pharisees say, did Moses command us to give divorce papers and to send her away? He said, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because of the hardness of your hearts. But it was not like that from the beginning. And I tell you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. His disciples say to him, if the relationship of a man with his wife is like this, it's better not to marry. Ka-ching. And he told them, not everyone can accept this saying. Not everybody can live their life unmarried. Now watch. Only those it has been given to can live life without getting married. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb. They don't need a mate. There are eunuchs who were made that way by men. They no longer could serve. They could no longer be part of a marriage relationship. There are eunuchs who have made themselves that way because of the kingdom of heaven. That's probably where Paul fits in. Let anyone accept this who can. Jesus is saying, if you've got the gift of God of celibacy, use it. I didn't know that was in my Bible. Yeah, there it is, right there. There it is, right there. Red letters. Now, in our world, I think the devil does a number on that gift. Young man looks around and sees that other young men are attracted to young girls, and he doesn't feel any of that. He doesn't have any of that sense of need. And the world says to him, you are male. The most important thing about you is your sex, boy. And what's he conclude? Well, then I must be gay. No, you're not gay. You're gifted. And the devil takes, through his deceitful practice, the special gift of God given for higher purposes and turns it into a perversion. Think about that. Now, that's what Paul's saying up here in verse 7. Paul is saying, I wish that all people were just like me, but each has his own gift from God. Number one, the command of Jesus Christ. If you are married, you are one flesh, let no man separate you. From the beginning, God created male and female and said, you leave mom and dad, you cleave to your wife, you remain married to her till death do us part. No fuzz there. No haze, no fog. Very clear. That is God's call. That's God's command.
According to Paul, singleness and the ability to live that way is a gift from God. It's something that can be used of God to further His kingdom. Yet the devil will get into that and, using doubt, turn it into a perversion and will only bring heartache and destruction. If you're single, consider that God has given you a gift. Seek things that you can do for God as a single person. Well, these daily lessons are available on single CDs. If you would like one, we have a copy for you. And we're calling today's lesson The World's Oldest Profession. For your gift of $7 or more, we'll send you this single lesson. Our complete series, Living Like It Matters to God, is available in a 10-disc set for your gift of $39 or more. We do have several ways you can order. You can call our toll-free number, 1-800-984-2313, or you can order on the internet when you log on to rightstartradio.org. Our website features an archive of past programs and complete uninterrupted sermons. Or you can write to us at Right Start Radio, Post Office Box 437, Worthington, Ohio, 43085. Let me remind you, too, that there are no corporate backers for Right Start. We depend solely on our listeners to step up and voluntarily provide the finances to pay our bills. Right Start is listener-supported. I'm John Skillman. Thank you for listening in today. Why don't you plan now to join us again on Friday at this same time for our next edition of Right Start.